Welcome back to Mental Health Integration. After talking about the stats on mental health and then which mental health issues were which and going through the myriad of mental health issues that there were, we need to take some time and talk about suicide. Suicide and mental health they're together a lot. So this is going to be a much more personal and much harder portion than the previous two. This is not in any way sort of removed and far away. We're going to go through some tangible things to do as an individual. This is not going to be corporate. This is not going to be a large scale. This is what you can do as an individual. We're going to go through a couple stories, and we're going to go through some of the statistics around suicide. So this is going to be a harder space. So because of that, I just want to throw this out. This is going to be information, but there could be some things if you have experienced being around suicide. This could be a little bit triggering. I have had the unfortunate privilege of walking through and around families who've gone through suicides, and I'll tell those stories in a few minutes. But so if this is something really personal to you, please know that take some time, do whatever you need to take care of yourself. Now we're going to start with the facts and figures so that you understand exactly what's going on with suicide. In 2020 in the United States, there were 45,797 suicides. Of those, 36,551 were males, 9,428 were females. Of those, 40,155 were whites, and 5,824 were non-whites. I want to take a few minutes just to talk about these stats and talk about kind of what's going on in the United States. Males have a suicide rate of almost 4 to 1 compared to females. It's 3.9. It's so much higher. It's just mind-boggling. But that doesn't necessarily tell the story of what's going on with desperation or what's going on with hopelessness. Likewise, there were 40,000 suicides among whites, 5,824 among non-whites. These numbers are actually not as disparate as they look. They are quite disparate, but they're not this jarring. The reason being that the suicide rate for non-whites compared to whites is around half, but there's huge segments of the population that are far more white than non-white, and because of that, you just get very, very different numbers, even if the rates aren't quite as different as the numbers make them look like. The reason that hopelessness isn't quite the same number as we think of is because of this. There were 1,149,475 attempts in 2020. That is 25 to 1, the ratio of attempts per suicide. So for every 25 attempts, there's one person who dies by suicide. Girls, females, actually attempt suicide at a 3 to 1 ratio compared to men. But men commit suicide or die by suicide almost 4 times as often. So when we talk about suicide, we have to talk a little bit about which populations are actually dying by suicide and what's going on. Now, suicidal ideation numbers, we're going to start there and then work backwards, have been going up a lot over the last 10 or 15 years, to the point where suicidal ideation among teens is around 10% in 2019, with about 10% of teens having points in the last year where they were suffering from suicidal ideation. But the suicide rate for teens is significantly lower because their rate of dying by suicide compared to attempts is about 100 to 1 or 200 to 1. The stats aren't clear because it's not clear how many attempts there actually are. This is not fun space to try and figure out exactly how many attempts versus how many suicides there were in the United States. Then, when you start getting a little bit older, suicide rates start actually going up. The highest rates of suicide in the United States are middle-aged men, specifically middle-aged white men. The second most high suicide risk race are American Indians or Native Alaskans, with suicide rates that are very close to actually what white men are. Below that significantly, about half are blacks and Latinos, and even lower than that are women. And then by race, women, you have whites, and then you have the same sort of step down. So what's going on that so many people are dying by suicide? The rates on suicide are actually down a little bit. Suicide is now the 12th leading cause of death in the United States. It used to be the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. It is the third leading cause of death in people under age 25. Just 3 or 4 years ago, it was the second leading cause of death under age 25. But the number of suicides has not really significantly dropped. It's dropped a little, but not a lot. Only 1,000 or 2,000. What we're seeing more and more is that there are issues like opioids that have gone up. We're actually seeing, we actually saw the numbers of murders go up, which is really, really surprising. And kids under age 25, it used to be that suicide was by far number two, accidents being number one. Now homicides is number two, and suicides is number three. But what we're also seeing is there are these small pockets of higher suicide risk that we associate with what's going on. So, as you can see, groups with a higher suicide risk include American Indians and Alaskan Natives, like we just talked about, whites, specifically veterans, who have a suicide rate almost 10 times as high as the general population, people who live in rural areas, whether that's because they have less access to mental health services or because they have more access to firearms or more privacy or whatever it is, and LGBTQ young people specifically having a suicide rate that is about 10 times higher than the general population. Now, some of these things have really specific answers, and some of them don't. In the cases of LGBTQ youth, there have been a number of nonprofits launched to try and work with them and try and make things better. Same with veterans. Same with a lot of these smaller populations, because the suicide rates are just so high. In some of these cases, we know what's going on. In the cases of things like veterans, there are things like PTSD at play. There's access to firearms. There's also issues of team and family. When you've got a group of people that become so tight-knit in the armed services, when they leave those armed services and they're suddenly alone, there's not just the trauma of war, but there's also the loss of brotherhood that comes with that. And it can be really, really hard for them to move through that at times. So, now I want to talk a little bit about memes. And this is not a really sexy topic. This is something that we just have to talk about. And that is that memes matter. Firearms are used in more than 50% of suicides in the United States. Suffocation makes up about 29% and poisoning about 13%. One of the reasons that men die so much more often from suicide is because of the means they choose. Unfortunately, suffocation and firearms are both very, very effective in some of these populations, and they're used by those populations. In a minute, I want to give a lot of guidance around how to talk about suicide. In general, there's not a lot of talk around means. And the reason is because if you tell somebody that you're worried about them committing suicide, the odds of you implanting the idea that they should kill themselves is almost zero. But if someone wants to kill themselves and doesn't know how, and you ask, do you have a gun at your house? The odds of them latching on to a means is much higher. So there's not a lot of talk about means, but we have to talk about it a little bit, because when a mean of suicide in this case is so effective, it doesn't give you a chance to screw up. There are studies done that there was a man who saved a number of people in San Francisco who were jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge trying to commit suicide. And of those that were saved, they tracked them, and 25% of those who were saved ended up dying by suicide, which is bad. But 75% of those who had tried to die by suicide that day but were stopped by a man did not go on to die by suicide, and in fact regretted that they had actually tried. So in some cases, we can see that suicide can be these acute points where pain gets to be too much, there's something going on. In the case of many youth who die by suicide, it's directly related to a fallout with a peer group or with parents or with a relationship. So there are these specific points, life gets really, really hard right here. We lose hope and we want it to go away. But people who survive a suicide attempt often say that they're so glad they did because they couldn't see that life could get better after that point, and it does. So I want to talk a little bit more about means. Malcolm Gladwell, in his book Talking to Strangers, talks about town gas and coupling. Now, in England, they used to use town gas, and it was a poisonous gas, and it was used in place of natural gas, especially in ovens. And in the way he tells the story, it accounted for a significant number of the suicides in and around Great Britain, up to close to 50%. Then town gas was taken out of stoves. All at one time, you get this dramatic change. They change out all these stoves, and suddenly there is almost no town gas being used. So it's lost as a method of suicide. And instead of suicide rates staying the same and people finding different means, the suicide levels dropped. And it looked like having a method that was really, really effective kept the suicide rate up in a way. It wasn't just that people wanted to die. They had a really, really effective, really easy solution to their problem. So they took it. In the United States, we have a lot of guns, and there are really, really effective means of suicide. I am not going to say you shouldn't have guns or anything like that. But I am going to say that if someone is an active suicide threat, if you feel like you have an active, if you're suicidal, it might be a good thing to say, hey, you know, I'm not thinking of, you know, killing myself right now, but maybe I should have my friend take these. I'm starting to have these feelings that I could potentially hurt myself at some point, so I'll just take the means off the table. And what the research is showing is that if the means are not available as easily, it's much less likely we're actually going to follow through. Which is great news. That's fantastic news. It means that we have more control than we thought. Now, I want to talk specifically about how to talk about suicide. You can't control the outcome, but you can make a difference. I have been in more suicide trainings than I ever want to count, and over it comes up that you can make a pretty profound difference. But there are some tools that you need to use. Now, there are specific signs that people who are considering suicide often do. If they don't do these signs, that does not mean they are not considering suicide. It means that these are common signs. You can look for people who are giving away their possessions, who just lost a job, or just got out of a very serious relationship. People who are really, really struggling financially. And then you can see those most likely to commit suicide who are white males specifically. Those other races you can look for as well, but specifically males are the most likely to actually die by suicide. If you catch any of those sorts of clues, it's a good idea to talk to the person about suicide. Studies have shown that if someone is talked to about suicide, their rates of actually doing it go down. We're often told that, you know, don't talk to them about suicide because you'll plant the idea in their head. But the research has shown over and over, you'll not plant the idea. They have the idea or they don't have the idea. You're not going to be the reason they commit suicide. You're going to be the reason they talk about suicide, and because of that, they might just get better. So, if you need to talk to someone about suicide, there's some really, really concrete rules. The first thing is this. Actually use the word death or suicide. Do not skirt around it. Do not use other words. Do not say, are you considering hurting yourself? Because someone might say, no, I'm not considering hurting myself, when they are considering killing themselves. It's just one of these interesting things. But you can ask questions like, are you considering death by suicide? Are you considering trying to kill yourself? Are you considering suicide? And just say it as bluntly as you need to. It can be really jarring to go through. So in most cases, I would ask you to pause right now and practice with a spouse or anybody who's around you and say, hey, are you considering suicide? You can talk about this in the case of someone who's lost their job, saying, hey, I know you just lost your job. That can be really, really hard. I want to make sure you're safe. Are you considering suicide? Someone might take it badly. That's okay. I would rather have them take it badly and be alive than not have the opportunity and not be alive. The second thing is, if someone says no, that's great. You don't have to worry about it. If someone says yes, because they'll be as surprised you ask the question as you were in some cases, then it's important to ask about next steps. Their next step after they say yes is, do you have a plan? The next question after that is, do you have means to accomplish your plan? The third question after that is, do you have a time frame for your plan? In this case, you might say, do you have a plan? And they say, yes, I was going to do such and such. And you say, okay, do you have the means to do that? Do you have that thing that it takes? They might say yes or no. And then the third question is, and what's your timetable? And they might say, I don't have one. Or they might say, Tuesday. or they might say this afternoon. Whatever it is, if they say yes, they are actively considering suicide, and yes, they have a plan, it's time to get some extra help involved. Now, in the United States, we have things like the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. There are other resources across the world, wherever you're at as well, that help with those sorts of questions. In the United States, it's really pretty phenomenal. We can call a phone number and get a hold of a professional who can actually walk us through next steps and even talk to the person who's considering suicide and walk them through next steps on how to get help. If they're actively considering suicide, it could be a situation where you actually need to help them get to a safe space. In the United States, you can do 72-hour mental health holds. They are not meant to help you get better. They are not meant to diagnose and treat mental illness and make sure that you're doing great. They are meant to keep you safe long enough that you can survive until this immediate threat goes down. And then after that, we can work on getting treatment in place. If you need those resources, please look them up. I will include the data for the National Suicide Prevention Hotline in the notes for this class. Now, a final note. You have to have really good boundaries, and you have to have an idea of forgiveness, because this can be really, really hard stuff to walk through. I have had to walk through trying to prevent people from committing suicide on a number of different occasions. And some of those were because of my job working with mental health. I had a couple of clients that we had to walk through suicidal ideation with. And some of those were personal and had nothing to do with my work or myself as someone with bipolar disorder, any of that. It just was what we were walking through with somebody I cared about. I want to tell you three of those stories, how they ended, and then some things that you need to know about moving forward. The first story is someone I was related to. And they had been just blown up by their family. They had had a really hard time with their family. And they were, at the time, actively considering suicide. I didn't know it. We met for lunch, and we talked for about the next 2 hours. And during that time, he asked me about my story and about how I'd gotten better. We broke the ice on all sorts of things around mental health and mental illness. And by the time that 2 hours was over, he said he didn't feel alone. In that case, I never questioned him about suicide. I didn't know anything about questioning about suicide. I didn't know any trainings about suicide prevention. I just told my story, and I listened to his. I got a phone call from one of my other family members weeks later that said, you know that person you met with? They were actively considering suicide. They were going to die if it was up to them, like that day or the next day. But because they talked to you, they didn't, because they believed they could get a little bit better. If somebody could make it, they could make it. That's story number one. That's kind of a best case scenario. I didn't know what I was doing. I had no idea what was going on. It helped. This is great. In the second case, I was married to the person that was struggling. I got a phone call from my wife's school psychologist. My wife had been a teacher at the time, and her school psychologist said, hey, I think Eugenia is having some really big struggles, that, you know, she's struggling with suicidal ideation. Does she have resources and help? And I did everything that I could to put those resources and help in her way. On the way home, we called her best friend, and I asked her best friend and Eugenia to talk to each other and form a plan about what to do next. She had threatened to jump out the car window. She had made plans. It was not a great place. But we got the resources in place. We got a peer support network put in place. And over the next few months, she started to do better and better and better. And finally, months later, there was an event that happened, and it would have pushed her. It would have been one of those things that just did not go well. Of all things, it was a spice falling out of a spice rack and breaking on the floor. And I remember being so scared, and then Eugenia just being fine. And at that point, it was like, oh, we made it. The last one was a good friend of mine. And I had asked him if he was considering suicide, and he had. He had been checked into mental health institutions a number of times. He had more tools than almost anyone I've ever met to deal with suicide. And he had attempted numerous times. And then in 2018, he died by suicide. And all of us that were around him knew the joy and the goodness that he brought to the world, knew the intentionality and the wisdom, and also knew his personal demons and how he fought them and how he lost. And the reason that I want to bring his story up to you is because you can do everything right. You can know the right interventions. You can execute them perfectly. You can be a great friend. You can help with resourcing. And it still might not be enough. In many cases, you can be the person who pulls them off the bridge, right? And then 75% say, thank you so much. I have my life back. I get to live it. But in those 25% of cases, someone says, no, I'm going to try again until I succeed. And sometimes there's nothing that you can do. And in that place, we need to talk about forgiveness. Because sometimes we hold ourselves responsible for someone else's suicide. And you're not responsible. You can do your best, but there's nothing that you can do as a person to just dictate that someone else's decision can't ever get made. If they've made the decision to do that, as my friend had, there's nothing that any of us could have done to stop him, because we would have done anything to try and make sure that didn't happen. But it still did. A couple of key pieces. If someone you know has attempted suicide, get them help. Call a therapist. There are lines that exist for that. There are resources around therapy that exist around that. Get them to a therapist. Get them, more than that, a community. Because one of the most damning things about suicide is the isolation. If someone's alone and they feel like there's no hope, that's a really bad place to be in. But know also that you can't save them. You can do your best. And sometimes that might be the thing that makes everything happen, right? Like my family member, you might be the person who talks them back into life. But it doesn't guarantee that you will. The second thing is, if someone you know has attempted, it is a great idea for you yourself to see someone. Because having someone that you know has attempted or who has actually died by suicide, it really messes you up inside. Because there are questions of, is it going to happen again? Questions of, what now? Questions of, is that something that could happen to someone else? That can rise and percolate up inside of you, and unless you have the space to deal with those, it can be incredibly difficult. So please see a therapist. Please get the professional help that you need. And please work through your own stuff. Then as you do, reach out to the people you care about and make sure that they have the opportunities that they need to see a therapist, to find community, to get the help that they need. because they might just discover that this life is still worth living. A last note is the importance of boundaries, which is you will try and do everything that you can often for someone you care about who is struggling with suicidal ideation. But as I mentioned before, you are not in control of their life. You do not have the dignity of their choices. They are still their own person. And because of that, you do have to form some boundaries personally and say, I will do my best, but I cannot be responsible for their actions. You also have to set the boundaries of saying, I will take care of myself because this is hard for me to go through. And I will do my best to do that. So as you step forward in this journey, I know this is kind of a different set, a different section. Please know that suicide is very real. This is a dramatic issue. This happens a lot. And it happens especially with people with mental illness. 90% of people who died by suicide last year in the United States reported suffering from depression of some kind or a mental illness, which in my mind means that 10% are probably in denial that they do, but that's okay. Please know that suicide's a real big deal. And know that it plays with mental illness, but the real issue here is hopelessness and pain. Hopelessness that it never gets better, and acute pain that this hurts right now. If you have any other questions, I will leave some resources below, and thank you so much, and I will see you next time so we can continue talking about mental health and integration.